This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 271 of the Countdown Podcast, where you will find one scrappy underdog fighting to overcome the tyranny of Paul Soundboard. My name is Wayne.
I stand resolute, motherfucker.
See, there it is, right there.
It's really hard to understand that if you're listening to the show, but that was Wayne firing back at Wayne for how ridiculous he was being. My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast with Countdown Movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. And today, as Wayne has very subtly alluded, we are doing the top 10 underdog movies.
Right.
Movies that are all about that little scrappy guy, the little wonderful girl who can overcome the odds and be successful. It may not be about sports, but it may be about sports.
It may be. It may not.
Well, we absolutely shall see. There were some people out there, including Smiley, Salmani, a listener to the show, who said that every film is basically an underdog story.
I didn't read that, but I was thinking that, like, if you think about a theme in a movie, it's obviously going from one place to another, which means usually some sort of triumph, though, right, is required. Is it? Like, it could be a triumph over yourself, over an insurmountable odd, yada, yada,
yada. What about leaving Las Vegas?
Right. Now, that was just a fucking dirge that went all the way down to the toilet.
8mm. Both Nicolas Cage films, incidentally. Again, my point is,
good point.
But you are right, Smiley, that you could read
a lot of them for sure.
And I have decided to take some liberties, not just all about sports films.
That's right, you got
to
play on it, man.
Yeah, and I'm very interested to see where you've gone in your
list.
This
is hard, this one, because I only, about halfway through, did I sit there and go, you know, as long as the movie isn't pure fucking depression all the way through, it's probably going to have a moment like this where you could argue the protagonist was always down and now he's up. I don't know. And then is that the underdog? Don't know. Mm. The way I went about it was just basically, if I could definitely know and point to, not only is this person that it's about actually not persecuted, but just at the bottom of the pile. Just, it's very obvious that they are not.
It's not just about overcoming. It's not stories about overcoming. It's about being an like you would never considered worthwhile.
Yeah, like if you're already rich, but you missed out on the big payoff, that's not an underdog story because you were already one of them rich cunts. See? So that's what I'm talking about. So yeah.
I agree. And so the films that are higher on my list have more underdoginess.
Yeah. I'm going to give everyone a little heads up behind the scenes. Paul and I are both fingered. We're a bit fucking...
No, we've had a couple
of... slightly inebriated.
Had a couple of drinks and the likes. You know, because it's nice to be able to hang out.
It's a Sunday night. Just chilling in the hood. You know how we do. So you're going to get sort of a laxed episode.
Big chance of that. And as per the new schedule, the way we're doing things, we're going to get straight into it then. So, Wayne, what do I lead away? I'll lead away.
You hit it, son.
My number 10, then, without any further ado, is a film which I know Epic Film Guy Nicholas hates.
Really?
Now, Epic Film Guy Nicholas, if you're new to the show, welcome. It's great to have you here. He's a very good friend of the show. He's been around for a long time. He hates The Goonies.
Does he?
I know. It's hard to give him any credence
is
as a human
young
being.
Is he young or something? Is he a young guy?
Yeah, I don't know. 1985, Richard Donner directed story about a group of kids who get together to save their living district from bankers. Those evil, evil bankers.
They
bastards.
Want to build a golf course on our house.
That's pretty much it. And they go looking for treasure, and they find the treasure, and they save their houses. And the fact that they're friends, they can continue to be friends and live together.
That was great.
And hang out. And for me, that's an underdog story.
Dude,
right?
It validated the life I had back then in the 80s of a 15-year-old boy.
15?
15. We were 15?
We were 10 when this movie came out, yeah.
Fine. Between the ages of 10 and 15... I used to ride my bicycle all around the hood, and when it was winter in Australia...
Is there any chance you were humming to yourself, good enough for me?
No, I hated Cyndi Lauper until time after time. Jesus Christ, you're killing me. All right. Hey! Shit. So, yes. No, but I love all that shit. And also, just the idea of just cycling to your friend's houses and down to Lismuddy Falls and shit like that you would go to was kind of Goonies-ish. So I totally was on board with this shit. Yeah, good call.
I once, during a game of bike chasey,
bike chasey,
where the boundaries were our suburb,
quick aside, bike chasey, which is when you're running, you're trying to tag each other, but you're on bikes instead
of
running.
Yeah, I think we agreed you had to be within like 5 meters. If you got within 5 meters, that's a tag.
Ah, so you don't have to actually jump on the other guy's bike.
No, because if you're doing like bike chasing in the street,
yeah,
then sure, it should be, you have to tag them. But if you're doing it in a suburb, which we frequently did.
Ah, yes.
It's not real fair to say, because I could see you coming, fuck you, and start riding in the other direction along very fast.
Oh, good point, right? Good point.
So anyway, no one was chasing me. I was just happily riding down a road somewhere near my house, you know, K away.
Yep.
And I hit an oil slick.
What? Oh, okay. Right? Oh, you went down.
And I went straight over my handlebars.
Fuck.
I don't understand how. To this day, I don't understand how. And I had this BMX at that point in time, mm-hmm. which had these really big tread, thick tread marks. And so I land on my shoulder, tears my shoulder up.
Fuck.
Right? And then the bike runs over my bicep and tears a chunk out of my bicep.
Really?
Where literally you can see the tread marks in my flesh from the bike.
Let me see them, cunt.
No, not anymore.
Oh, okay. All right.
It all healed. Point being,
fuck.
Like, it was a hell of a crash.
When you go down when you're a kid on a bike, man, your shit is fucked up for days.
It wasn't just blood. It was like gushing.
I've had fucking a rock in my asshole before, man. Just fucking blam. You skid along the floor.
Just as an aside, next day I played football nonetheless in the ruck.
Really? See, when you're young.
My coach just said, we can't play without you. You're the only tall guy on the team. Don't think I played very well.
I did play
in the ruck, yeah.
Okay. Well, nice one. Goonies, for what it's worth.
That's my number 10. Over to you.
Well, my number 10 actually is a sports one, but it's one that's close to my heart.
Plenty of those coming. Don't get me wrong.
Okay, good. And then I guess I imagine this will turn up there. Major League.
Oh my God, so low.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Sorry to put that on the ass end there, but the other ones were, I don't know, look.
Terrible. Terrible choice, so low.
Everyone, Major League was this show that was, what, 1989? Yeah, something like that, okay? It's got fucking Charlie Sheen in it, Corbin Burnson, Willie Mays Hayes, Wesley Snipes. Right?
It was on 89.
Yeah, 89, right? And it's about the Cleveland Indians. These are all MLB, or Major League Baseball people, and they're the bottom of the pile. So basically, it's up to them to actually fight their way to the top of the fucking league. Because they are
not
being
even
beset.
They just happen to make the playoffs. They make it by one game.
Oh, that's right. They actually don't get to the. That's right. The movie ends when they just make the playoffs.
Well, they win the first round.
Yeah,
they win the first game into the playoffs.
So they didn't even win the.
We don't even see they win the title.
How come no one fucking noticed that?
I don't know.
Why didn't they just make that the fucking the title instead of a fucking heat, a qualifier?
I'm just going to stand beside. We normally will talk about a film here, but it's so low, I feel the need to wait until where it should be to talk about it again.
All right, fine. All I will tell you is that me and Paul saw this movie. You know, and there's the I'm sure you have the sound.
Well, I was going
to
say
no,
that.
No, leave it till later. Leave it till later.
Suck my dick.
There, that one, okay? Now, if you've seen the movie, the reason that line is good in a movie and shit on a soundboard.
On our podcast.
There is because it's said casually in response to someone saying to Tom Berenger, stay away from her. And he's like, suck my dick as he shakes his hand.
I think what you mean is, suck my
dick. Fuck off. Yes, so exactly. Major League. Paul will talk more about it when it's his number one.
He certainly will. He certainly shall. My number nine. My number nine is a film from one of our favorite filmmakers and indeed one of our favorite TV showrunners. Joss Whedon. I'm talking about Serenity.
Oh, good fucking call. Good fucking call.
Serenity, if you've not seen it, is the conclusion of the Firefly TV show, which was criminally cut short.
Criminally cut short.
After one season, after being completely mistreated by Fox and...
Networks.
Yeah, the next week, sorry.
Yeah.
And effectively gives a bit of a wrap-up to this ragtag group of...
Space pirates, maybe? I don't know. What would you call them? I don't know.
Rebellious... A rebellious ship led by Captain Mal Reynolds and having lost the Great War are up against the Alliance to sort of smuggle shit around to the independent planet. Well,
whatever. The Space Cowboys, that's a nice way of putting it.
And this film kind of ends with them having to battle the Alliance and battle the Reavers to get the message out that the Reavers exist, these cannibalistic kind of...
But you only see the Reavers in motherfucking the movie, right? Or did you see him in the show?
No, they see one in the
show. See one in the show? Because it's like, they're fucking just horrendous and it's awesome.
Yeah, these cannibals who, they're like completely psychotic. It turns out that they are the result of bad experiments from the Alliance and they are going to broadcast this news to bring the Alliance down, and they have to get to this relay station against all the odds, completely outclassed, outmatched, and it relies upon all their skills to get to that point.
The cool thing,
there are sacrifices.
There's massive.
Along the way.
But even like the fight between the two people, shall we say, at the end, is so epic and so like well fought, I guess just earned, right? I thought that that's what makes this movie awesome. I'm really pissed that it did not lead to the next
thing. It didn't make
enough
money.
Amazed because remember when I saw it, Paul took me to an event screening of it and it was like, it looked great to me, so yeah, bit of a picture.
Yeah, we got to see it before it was even completed, which was real special, but well before the podcast, 10 years before the podcast, there was even a glint at the milkman's eye.
That's right. I'm surprised you put this on there.
Oh, is it on your list?
It's not on my list, but it's an HM. But yeah, my number 9, and people, this is pure frivolity, okay? But I love this movie. It's Limitless. It's a Bradley Cooper and motherfucking... Bobby De Niro movie. Yeah. And it's about this aspiring writer, and Bradley Cooper is made up to look like a loser. It still doesn't really work. And he's just in the doldrums. He's been dumped by his woman. He's heading back home, meets his former brother-in-law, Vernon, who gives him a drug, which basically makes his brain wake up. And all of a sudden, he can do everything. And it's like Lucy. But it's,
but better,
yeah. This movie here...
there's no Animal Kingdom sounds edited in.
That's right.
And he doesn't turn into black goo.
Which is a piece of shit. Exactly. That's it. This movie is produced by Bradley Cooper, okay? And it is freaking awesome. It is an easy show to watch. Throw this on anytime. It is always a good watch. They use things like, for instance, before he takes the drug, the movie's sort of lit or dank, right? And as soon as he takes it, it just brightens up and you see how he's... The way that it actually looks wicked and feels wicked. I love Limitless. Big-ass, cool-ass movie. Even like me, some Robert De Niro in it. He's doing it pretty much the job he always does. But it's still great.
Okay. Surprise. Didn't register on my radar, but yeah. I'm glad that there's some different ones there for the both of us.
Mm-hmm.
My number 8 is arguably a great.
A great?
Says, hopefully. A great underdog story. It's from Edgar Wright. I'm talking Scott Pilgrim.
Oh!
Versus the entire world!
Yeah, fair enough. That's slightly low.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah. So he really wants Ramona. Don't understand why. She's not that great.
Now, Paul doesn't like Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and I'm not sure why, because I think she's fantastic in this movie, and she's just beautiful.
I think we've just accounted for the difference in our list.
Yeah. The ranking. Oh, shit. Yes.
No, seven evil exes, and he has to battle them all, and exactly. They are increasingly superpowered.
No kidding. One is Captain America.
No. One is Superman.
Yeah. Damn.
And one is Captain Marvel. Wait, no.
Is he?
She's just in it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. No chance at all, yet he manages to fight his way to victory and take her hand and move on with their lives.
The real victory is the stylistic choices and how well they come
out. No question how good this movie looks from 2010. It's incomparable. It's such a shame it wasn't a bigger hit than it was. I'm glad now that Edgar Wright's getting some of the kudos he deserves, particularly with Baby Driver.
Oh, yes.
I'm very keen to see Last Night in Soho when that does comes drop. Out. Now that's been pushed back to April next year because of COVID.
Speaking of Edgar, yep. I read that he stated that the movie was done in the style of a musical, but instead of the characters breaking into song and dance, they break into a fight.
Best
that
musical
is the best
ever.
Every musical should be like that.
Should. Oh, well, we're inevitably made to do the top 10 musicals by one of the patrons. This will be my number one then.
It's still not a musical. That battle scene between Scott Pilgrim and Matthew Patel is done in the style of a Bollywood fight scene. That's okay. What he's doing there. Yep. So it's cool. It's cool.
Very cool. Very great nice. Film. All right, cool. That's my 8. Over to yours for yours.
My number 8 is 300. Remember that movie?
Oh.
Okay, good. Good.
We are on a similar wavelength today, clearly.
Everyone, 300 is a movie about the Spartans. It's a legend, basically, of the Spartans taking on the great army of Persia. Basically, Gerard Butler is the king. He has 299 or 300 of his own men, and they basically go and take on what looks like 200 million Persians. There is such a
vast arrows. Well, blot out the sun.
Exactly. Now, speaking of stylistic success here, this movie itself looks like a fucking Sistine Chapel sort of like fucking painting kind of
beautiful,
thing. The way it's lit, the way it's put together. This is where Zack Snyder makes his bones. If you think to yourself, no, there's, you know, you like shit on Zack Snyder, the Snyder Cut, this, that, whatever. The guy is definitely a talented technical director, no question about it. Not the best writer,
style,
maybe.
Style.
Style coming out of his ass. So, absolutely, I love this thing. Adapted from a Frank Miller graphic novel, which I'm a big fan of, even though it's drawn like shit. Frank Miller cannot draw. He can write, but he cannot draw. Trust me. That's, I love the show. What can I say? Really,
yeah,
really cool.
Yeah, I agree. And in every sense that you said, I just think the way it's cobbled together, where you're really like, these guys are sacrificing themselves for the greater good for Sparta.
Yeah, it makes it cool. I also thought it was quite cool that King Leonidas, Jared Butler, looks to his wife for approval before assassinating the messenger and kicking him down a fucking well.
This like, is Sparta!
Yeah, all great stuff.
Yes, Lena Headey, so from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, Cersei, yeah.
Cersei Lannister there as well. Wonderful film. Wayne's probably summarized it all perfectly. It's uplifting, and that completely small group against the odds. Mm-hmm. There are very few films that personify it better or illustrate this better.
Yeah, you're on board with them. And they're kind of cool too. Like, Joe Abel is kind of cool. So, you know.
Back in the day.
Back in the day.
Back in the day. Very nice choice. My number seven is one that maybe some people will suggest is too low, and it can be best summarized by
Karate Kid. I can't believe you put this on here. I thought this was. Did you just put it on so you could play that sound, you motherfucker? A little.
A little from column A. A little from column B.
Okay, so we know how Paul thinks and what he thinks is important.
I just think this film is. He comes from New Town.
Yeah.
He's immediately picked on by the bullies from the Cobra Kai.
Mm-hmm.
And with only the tutelage of Mr. Miyagi and the love of Wayne's love of one of his loves of his life, Elizabeth Shue.
She's a lovely girl.
He manages to overcome and succeed and win.
Oh, yeah.
At the tournament of tournaments or whatever it's called in the show.
I don't know. It really was big news, wasn't it, this show? I remember at the time it was huge.
Look, it's probably fair to say that this hit us at the right time. Like, totally. This film came out like when we were 9 or 10 years old. So, like, right around when it would matter.
Yeah.
If I watched this as a 30-year-old, I'd be like, poof.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bunch of shit.
Good point. And you know what? I thought when the bad guys in the skeleton costumes were beating him up, I thought that was absolutely harsh.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
I thought it was really, really harsh. Like, fuck, this is actually quite a hard movie.
I think some people are just born with a little bit of honor, right? Or it's educated into them that you don't, four of you don't attack one dude and like kick the shit out of him on the ground.
No,
right?
No, that's, it's.
You let the person get up.
It's a, oh yeah, it's, it was a definite gang beating kind of shit.
Yeah, one on one, go for it, blah, blah, blah. But bullies don't act like that. They act on the power of many, right?
Yeah, you're right. The idea that four motherfuckers who are all trained would want to kick you to shit, it's is like so scary.
And like, given that, okay, their tutelage is bad in the film, which is established, but still, you win at all costs. 4-on-1? That's just fucking shit to me.
No, that's just being, that's just having fun with someone. That's why having fun by inflicting pain. And that's why it was so harsh, because every boy at that age especially, there's bullies you have to contend with in school.
Everyone's
you know that you're, the threat of being your ass whooped in front of everyone is always there. So it was big.
So the point that, you know, the meme which has gone around that actually Johnny was the victim. Yeah, and then fuck.
No, it was
off.
Not. It
was, he might have cheated in the end with a crane kick. He might have. But deservedly.
He got it taken on by four cunts.
Given that four of them sit on him. Or five of them, whatever the fuck there are. It's ridiculous. And anyone who actually believes that, you're just doing it to shit people.
Okay, I'm surprised this one made your list, son. Okay, there you are. And you know what? We're back to you, because this is seven's where I put Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, okay. So not too low.
Yeah, you are.
Down the list. My number six, then, is a film which I championed to you for quite some time before. I think you finally got around to watching it.
Mm-hmm.
It's from Gavin O'Connor. It's Warrior.
Yeah, great show. Now, tell me about Warrior. The only reason it's not on my list, because I thought about it, and I saw it on a lot of people's lists as well. Mm-hmm. Was there an actual, is Tom Hardy the underdog?
Okay, so I was a little bit torn on this. Why it landed at six.
Yeah.
Right? No, I think Joel Edgerton is the underdog because he's not as tough as his brother, right?
Yeah.
But they're both underdogs. Neither of them deserved to make it to the end, which on one hand almost launched it to my number one. In an early cut of this list, it was my number one.
Neither of them deserved to make it to the end?
Well, neither of them were predicted to make it. There were better fighters in the UFC or whatever else.
That should have kicked both their asses.
But for different reasons, they both were awesome, right?
That's true. And then the thing, the harsh being is that at the end they have to meet on each other.
Yeah, but at the same time, having two underdogs kind of cancel each other out in my weird logic.
Yeah, sort of.
Which is why it dropped to number six.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, okay. Okay.
It could have dropped off the list.
Now that you've explained that, it makes complete sense because your compulsion is, well, the two main characters, which one is the underdog? Well, they both are.
Yeah, they both are in their own particular way.
So it is an underdog tale.
But when they get to the absolute fight, which is kind of where I came at, and then decided, look, it had to be on this for me because it is a wonderful film. Joel Edgerton is the underdog going to that last fight because Tom Hardy's a beast, right?
Yeah.
And Joel Edgerton's character is well-trained,
mm-hmm.
but he's slider and he's not as... He couldn't possibly win.
Yeah.
Bam. See the movie.
Nick Nolte is basically making that... Like, they're both all great, but Nick Nolte's performance is... Fuck. That nails it, man. So I remember that.
Nick Nolte's performance elevates it to the next level.
Totally.
And I think the soundtrack here is also excellent from... I think it's Mark Isham off the top of my head.
Obviously, I didn't even register.
So for me, it just works on multiple levels.
Mm-hmm.
And it deserves a mention in this particular countdown. Okay. So at the end of the day, 6 for Warrior for me.
6. Well, my number 6 was Django Unchained.
Oh, okay.
Now, this is a funny one here because obviously the underdog aspect being him slavery to actually becoming, you know, whatever. But more importantly...
Free man.
Yeah. I often mix up my Quentin Tarantino films. Sometimes I think this one is the Sam Jackson one, the Hateful Eight. Just because they're all like westerns, kind of not really, but not really. Well,
yeah, they are westerns.
Period.
That's fair.
Yeah,
but
no,
different films.
I know, totally different films. It's just the setting. But with the Django Unchained, the thing that makes me put it on this list is often when you see revenge films, in this case, the underdog moving up to whatever and overtaking these oppression. It's not that satisfying when it finally goes down. This one is satisfying.
Oh, yeah.
This one is like, he fucked them up. And he got fucking gangster about it. And all this shitty, like, just, it was huge. And then the dancing horse thing at the end. I don't know. It became like, I don't know. That scene, I remember it for some reason. And I was remember thinking to myself, this was an odd thing to put in there. But it really plays on my head. So this
the oddest thing about that movie for me is Quentin Tarantino was an Australian.
Oh, that was, it's because he likes that actor from Saw. And he put him in there.
Lee Winnell?
No.
No?
Well, not Saw. Maybe it was Wolf Creek.
John Jarrett.
Yeah, John Jarrett's in that scene with him.
Oh, okay.
All right, and he's actually playing off John Jarrett, and that's why he puts him in. I think that's what happened. But yeah, Django Unchained, big, huge fan.
Okay.
And
it definitely qualifies. No, yeah. No question at all. My 5, so get ready, back to you, 300 is where I put it for me.
Ah, nice. Okay, well, my number 5 goes a little Wayne-ish. My number 5 is Almost Famous.
Now, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so here you have Cameron Crowe's basically a mixtape of 70s rock songs put to a movie about this kid who represents him. It was basically biographical about his life as a young Rolling Stone reporter. In the movie, this kid goes on tour with Stillwater. The actual Cameron Crowe went on tour with the Allman Brothers Band. And he's...
which is so much cooler. He went on tour with Rolling Stones or someone.
I know. But he did actually...
Someone enduring.
He was in a near-fatal plane crash while traveling with The Who.
And oh, right.
That actually, in a way, happened in the movie. Right?
No,
so,
it absolutely did.
Yeah. So all this shit like actually happened to him. And it's basically the show of this kid coming out of... He's like 15 or whatever, right? And... gaining his manhood through this thing.
Cameron Crowe was really 15 when all this happened?
Something like
Who
that.
Who pays someone to write at age 15?
70s, man. No one gives a fuck about anything. Everyone was just LSD. I don't know. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Who the fuck would do that? Anyway. But yeah, so it's the bomb. And I wonder if Cameron Crowe actually was deflowered by two hippie women, as is the person in this movie.
Wondered or hoped?
I hope for him it's true. But I also understand how you might write that into a movie about yourself. So there you are.
All right. That completely threw me. I've got nothing else to add other than...
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
I think Paul didn't know the song Tiny Dancer until he saw this
movie. No, I didn't. Honestly, didn't.
That's fucking insane. You know who else is like that? Dave Grohl. He tells a story on stage about how he didn't know the song. And I'm like, where did you two cunts grow up?
Are you trying to slight me by comparing me to the greatest rock god of modern era?
No. I'm just saying you're both probably the same people. It's probably a pump-up,
that's even
if anything.
More of a
yeah,
pump-up.
Yeah, fair enough.
Oh, my
no,
God.
I'm fine with that.
I am so hard right now.
moving uncomfortably along.
My number 4 is upping your Django Unchained by talking about one African American who rises above the era he's in and the slavitude he finds himself in,
And the cover brother. No, sorry.
And applying it in a period setting to an entire battalion of soldiers who did so. It's Edward Zwick's Glory.
Glory, yes.
Oh my God, what a movie. James Horner.
You and your James fucking Horner.
I know. I would horn the Horner.
Oh, there you are.
I think it's just a wonderful movie. Denzel, probably my first real introduction to Denzel and the powerhouse that he would be at that point in time. Morgan Freeman, what a movie.
When was this movie?
1989?
Yeah, early on there.
1989.
You're right, it would have been like the first time you probably heard Denzel.
Captain Holt, Andre Brown, in this movie as well.
Is that where I saw him before? Yeah. I always wondered where the hell I saw him.
He's obviously moved up from being a corporal to being a captain.
There you go.
Which is great to hear.
Congratulations for not playing the vindication lane there. Well done. Fuck off. No, it's good. Don't do it, you fucking prick. Ah, bitch.
Vindication. God
damn. Fuck off. Oh, God. I'm so sorry, everyone.
Just an amazing story. Like, even in the fact that it was made in 89, and I'm... You know, obviously there's a lot going on at the moment, which is very troublesome and the like. And without getting, because we're not a political show.
Not even a bit.
But obviously we totally agree with what's going on. And we hope that there will be change as of this, not just in America, but in Australia as well. But in 89, they'll make this movie and it was a big hit. And yes, it's a period piece. And it's about the Civil War where a group of African Americans are effectively conscripted to be cannon fodder, you know, for the white soldiers, but rise above that to win battles and to excel because...
And there's lots of little themes in here. Like, I remember it's like there's that scene where the African-American soldiers, like, he's injured and it's like, you got to go back. Like, don't send me back.
Yep.
Because it's better at war than his actual life. It's like, what the fuck?
All of that and the fact that Matthew Broderick's commanding officer was, you know, obviously a white man, but... completely, like, these are people.
Totally.
There's no difference here. I will lead this. I don't give a fuck. Fuck every cunt.
They all face the same cannon.
Doesn't say those words.
Yes.
I wish he did.
You're awesome. Imagine that. Glory. Fuck those cunts.
My apologies, but not to trivialize a very important theme at the moment, but that's why it's here for me at my number four.
Fair enough. My number four is a freaking just one of my favorite movies. It's Molly's Game. Now we have...
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, remember, she was a cocktail waitress who was you know, she was the sort of the assistant of this dude who ran a little kind of poker game. And then he started fucking with her by not paying her and all sorts of shit. So she breaks away and starts her own game. And it becomes bigger and the biggest game in town. And Tobey Maguire turns... I mean, Michael Cera grows up.
I mean,
but
Mr. X.
Yeah, Mr. Player X turns up. And that's obviously... it's from a true story. And about Molly Bloom. Now, first of all, apart from all that shit that I said, we have to talk about Jessica Chastain because she's just awesome. Okay. Yes, I'm a big fan.
How is she awesome, Wayne?
Oh, shut up.
What makes her awesome?
Can fuck off. That's what.
Yeah, please explain.
Fine. Her awesome red hair and her pretty face and her excellent delivery and her awesomeness in general. I love me some Jessica Chastain.
Well done.
Because you were thinking I was going to say something else. Yeah, I'll
I
bet.
Thought you were going to talk about another aspect of her.
Yes, there's a physical part of it, but really, it's also how she nails this. Her strength as a woman is really apparent in this thing. And even though really bad shit happens to
100%.
Her, the way she shakes it off is wicked. And I've shown this to a couple of people, and they've just always been blown away by how cool it is. So, Molly's Game. Check it out, people, if you haven't.
All right. Surprising, in a way, but also, I think, a great and appropriate choice. My number three is maybe the quintessential underdog story. It's one that won an Academy Award. It's one I spoke about last week in the top 10 70s films. It's John G. Appleton's Sylvester Stallone written Rocky.
I knew Rocky would get on here.
Come on. Wayne.
I almost put Rocky 4 on here just to piss you off.
Five. You're acknowledging, no, if you put 5 on here,
5 would have been great.
I would have ended the podcast at that fucking point in time.
Damn it, now it's too late. Son of a bitch.
You tell me Rocky's not on your list of underdog?
Because first of all, I saw Rocky 2 first. Actually, it might have been Rocky 3 with Mr. T.
Who cares?
So I never got to the, like, I just came in. It's like Star Wars. It's like Empire. I think I watched Empire before Star Wars. So I only heard of the legend before seeing it. Plus, I was about 3 minutes old. So I think, for me, it's...
But can you not understand? The whole point of last week's show was you can understand greatness that predates our ability to understand it.
I think the story of how it got made is more underdog wicked than the actual movie itself. But I do still respect it as a result. No,
that adds to the mystique.
Yes.
100%. Like, you know, he stuck to his guns. Mm. They didn't want him to be in the film. He said, no, fuck you. I'm not giving you 200. For 200,000, we'll take the script off. We'll make, nope, I'm in it.
Exactly.
In it or fuck off.
He's the tits.
Yep. And that set his career up. That's a hell of a story.
No, yeah. And he nails it as well. So, like, I mean, I was in Philadelphia and ran up those steps. Because every fucking tourist does.
No, I would have zero hesitation doing a run in Philadelphia.
I mean, you would actually be able to run instead of almost die at the top like I did. So there you are. Excellent. No, okay, fine. Sure. This is huge. Even
to argue with some of our, not argue with, but to agree with some of our listeners, Philly itself is kind of like an underdog city.
Is it? Because it's so new.
Compared to like New York yeah. And Boston and the like. So
interesting.
Not trying to be offensive. I'm just.
No, I think that's cool. I love Philly. That's a cool place. Jeez, dick.
But stunned, it's not on your list.
Yeah, no, I knew it wouldn't be, but I also knew that you would freak like this, and hence I like this. So, nice
one. You are a sad, strange little man, and you have my pity.
Hey, what are you going to do? My number three is Brave Damn Heart, which I know is... Yeah.
No!
Okay, fine.
I'm glad it's on your list.
This is your jam. Very glad. Okay, but let me tell you about this William Wallace show, which I did not expect to like, and I see how... I'm sorry, Mel Gibson is a charming motherfucker, right?
Yep.
For him to wear that hair and still make me like him, fantastic, all right? I know.
Wayne battling his hair envy again.
Hair envy again, absolutely. I have no issue with the ending insofar as all I can say is that I would have taken the fucking drugs.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you.
I would have taken 100%. The fucking drugs. And I would.
In fact, if I may jump
please,
in here.
Please.
Epic Film Guy Nick and I did a deep dive on this on a recent episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. Do go check out them for this. And I said as much as that, I would not be as brave a man to refuse this.
Also, right, here's the problem with that, right? No one knows, right? Like he is given a drug which will say, what do they do to you tomorrow? You won't feel it if you take this drug right now. She even gives it to him and kisses him and
his
whatever.
His concern was he would just blurt out whatever they wanted to hear. He would give, fealty to the English king. He would apologize for his crimes.
But because he feels the drug was like pentothal.
It would numb him. It would numb him to the point where, like, yeah, whatever, fuck yeah.
That's not set up anywhere. I thought he was doing it so that he would be like more of a man.
No, he literally says, I don't want the drug to numb me, so I will say the wrong thing.
Really? That's actually better. I would have taken that chance like a motherfucker.
Yep.
Actually,
likewise.
I would not be brave enough to end up in that cell in the first place.
We're not Braveheart.
No.
That's why.
That's right. I would never have been like, they wouldn't even know who I am. They would have been like, there was some guy there, it was a brown guy, but he ran the fuck away. So there you go.
It's not his island. I a great choice. I'm glad it's on your list.
Thank you.
I very much in. Okay, my...
You insignificant! Little fuck!
That's what happens when Paul accidentally hits a button, y'all.
Yeah, that's what happens after some drinks. My number two is, this is where, appropriately, Major League should be. And I need to talk
about
a little bit more. You've forgotten about it,
haven't you? Too dirty whore! All right, let's hear about it. Too!
Dynamite drive-in money at broadcast school has really paid off.
Bobby Wecker there.
Okay. So I think your soundboard's got something to do with this placement, but please keep going.
Watch it again, literally. Okay. The whole reason this show came about is we have a sort of things that we want to do immediately and a longer list of things that we could come to eventually.
Yeah.
And this catapulted itself into the things that we'll do immediately after I watched Major League again last weekend. This is the ultimate underdog story. Almost.
Is it the ultimate, though?
There's a bunch of has-beens and never will-bes that are brought together by an owner who wants them to lose. If they can keep the league attendance below, I think it's 800,000 the whole year, they can move wherever the fuck they want to. And she wants to move to Las Vegas, where she'll get membership at all the exclusive clubs and whatever else and da-da-da-da. So she's completely and utterly wanting to run this club into the ground. Now, Cleveland Indians hadn't won a title in 34 years or whatever it is. Right, they were nowhere near it. And so they weren't a destination club. No one wanted to play there. And so with their restrictions on everything, and she gets the guy to hire, the general manager to hire, I think whatever his name is, Lou Brown becomes the general manager.
Yeah.
They think he's going to be shit. So much so that when he takes the phone call, he's like, hang on, Charlie. I've got a call, guy on the other line about some tires. I'll call you back. Like... Even he can't be asked.
Yeah.
And yet they come together, and it's really believable, this film, how they do so, because they really suck at the start. Some films, the transition from sucking to being good isn't well handled.
Yeah, I suppose you're right, because I remember that Bob, what's his name?
Bobby Wecker.
Bobby Wecker. He's
Harry,
like,
whatever his name is in the film.
Yep. And he's like, well, they have managed to win a few here and there. And so he's like, when it comes like,
it's great.
It sneaks up on you a bit.
It's a great device, the way their reactions, and his in the commentary box with his upsider.
Yeah.
You know, That's a perfect. And then they have the cutting to sort of the three different people in the community, one of which is a construction worker who is the janitor in Scrubs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which I didn't recognize till this rewatch. Yeah.
He was in The Fugitive.
And
in
the
this.
Two Chinese American dudes who are laying the doing the grounds, like doing the lines or whatever, they're still shitty. They're still shitty.
Yeah. Yeah.
You said Charlie Sheen, you said Wesley Snipes.
I love Charlie Sheen in this.
Yeah, he's great. I think Tom Berenger.
Tom Berenger great
back
in
before
this?
He's weird and creepy, like he is in Sliver. This is peak Berenger.
Yeah, you're right. This is
Rene Russo, our first introduction to
Was
her.
This the first?
Yeah.
Because we adore her. We still adore her now.
Even now.
This is all good.
Even now.
Yes. Go ahead. Say something like you'll Russo her Rene.
Okay. You want to Russo her Rene.
No, that doesn't make any sense at all. You can't just put the last name first and turn it into a verb.
No, you can't.
It's going to pull out.
I think you're missing the point of this game. Actually, arguably, it works better as you want a Rene Russo.
No, you said something like you're going to take a Rene at that or something. You have to pun it out, motherfucker. She'd be Russo-less with you.
Yes.
Yeah, something like that.
That's good. Okay, I like that one. I'll pay that one, but it doesn't work in the Rene-ness.
Fuck off. Anyway. Oh, dear.
Spent half of this episode talking about that.
That's right, yeah. That's
point being, I think you had it way too low, and this is where Major League should be. It's an amazing film. It's chuckle-worthy all the way through, even after the 15th time I've watched this movie.
I actually haven't watched it in years, and yeah. I feel like we should do it as a review.
Who is this fucking guy?
Who's this fucking guy?
Oh, hey, next weekend. Major League.
We just fucking talked about it.
I can just give you the music now if you want to download it.
No, we're good.
Okay.
End
of the episode then.
Okay.
Over to you for your number two.
My number two is Cinderella Man. Mm. Oh, dude. Check it out. All right.
Really?
So everyone. Yes. So check it out. Right. So everyone says it's the real life story of James Braddock. He's this supposedly washed up boxer. He comes back to become a champion. This is like the 1930s. Okay. Russell Crowe plays him. And after he loses an important fight and he fractures his arm, he basically hits rock bottom, turns to shit, the depression, fucked up his whole family and the whole world. But he's given a chance to fight again. And basically, he beats his way back up to the top. But he has to overcome a bad guy played by Craig Bierko named Max Bayer. And again, this is a real story.
Yeah, fits.
So I watch this, right? And then I go, just for fun, and watch the actual fight from the 1930s.
Oh, wow. I have it.
Right? Yeah. First of all, these two characters look like each other.
Wow.
Braddock actually looks like Russell Crowe, and the other guy looks like Craig Bierko. The fight's going on. Now, this movie would have you think that Craig Bierko is like that character is the worst. Max Bayer was the worst guy ever, and he's a womanizer. He kills people in the ring.
My
and he wants
vague
to...
memory is that there's a moment where he does show some humanity. Like, he's not the one all thing
he
does, bad.
He would go up to Russell Crowe and say, quit this fight. I don't want to turn your wife into a widow. Right?
Yeah, maybe
but
that was it.
That was as close as he gets, right? Anyway, I'm watching this actual fight, and I'm seeing the actual two guys fight, and I'm watching Max Bayer, and this is not a bad... Like, when the fight goes, bing, he pats him on the back, and after all this sort of stuff, he actually is, like, tipping his hat to the crowd. He's not a bad guy. It looks like it. They even hug after it's over, right? And then I go, and basically it turns out that he's the nicest guy ever. He did kill two people, but it was an accident, and the second guy only died, like, 2 months after the fight. That kind of shit, right? So it's interesting how they had to make him a bad guy for this movie.
Yeah, but it's funny, though, you say that. And I only watched it last year, and it's not just that moment, because that's a moment where he's saying in front of his wife, and he's being a cunt.
Yes.
But there's a moment somewhere in the movie where he's shown not to be like, I don't know if he's giving money to someone or he's trying to help out somewhere, but there was a moment where they kind of show him to be more than just a thug.
I wonder if that was in a tip of the hat to we're really assassinating this guy's character here. If anyone that's still alive that's his relative, they might be pissed.
Of course they're not 90 years later or 85
no, I imagine
years later.
Not. No. But I think they would, that's, I suppose it gives
a relative,
character a bit
of course,
more.
Sons or children.
Yeah.
Children, maybe.
No, but.
But okay, all right. Look, it definitely fits the brief. So, you know, on that basis, no arguments. All right, my recap then before let's get into my number one. My number 10, The Goonies. 9, Serenity. 8, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. 7, The Karate Kid. 6, Warrior. 5, 300. 4, Glory. 3, Rocky. 2, Major League. And my number one, here is where I stuck, Braveheart.
There it is, Braveheart, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, I mean, come on, you led an uprising which ultimately led to the independence of your nation. That's a pretty good... I mean, he wasn't there for it. Obviously,
and the Chris Pine movie. So,
and the Chris Pine movie. That could be on this list too. It's a great film, Outlaw King. I think it's a really good follow-up to this movie. So
I remember Braveheart more fondly, but yeah, of course.
Braveheart's more heart.
Yeah.
Right. Braveheart has more emotion attached to it. There's some moments which are tear-welling in this movie. There's none of that in Outlaw King, but the fight scenes are incredible.
Still amazing.
Yeah. When it gets to the end point of Outlaw King and it shows the way history played out and he did win independence for Scotland, wonderful.
Very nice. Okay, fine. I get it. That's totally you. My 10 to 1 goes like this. 10, Major League. 9, Limitless. 8, 300. 7, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. 6, Django Unchained. 5, Almost Famous. 4, Molly's Game. 3, Braveheart. 2, Cinderella Man. And my number 1 is The Great Escape. This is an old movie. Oh, it's a 1963 movie with Steve McQueen and like a bunch of folks in it. I did see it with my grandparents, but I remember something at the time. It's basically about, you know, World War II and this Nazi detention camp, which has a bunch of American soldiers in it, including, like, you know, fucking James Garner and Donald Pleasence and Charles Bronson and James Coburn. All these dudes, they have to break out of that shit and cross the border into Switzerland. Now, the movie itself is great in what it does, and I was totally into it. But then at the end, it turns into a fucking action movie, man. And there's this scene where the only guy left, a few of them make it across, but Steve McQueen's got this motorcycle, and he's trying to jump over, there's about 4 or 5 whatever barriers to get to the other side, and the German army is on him. And he actually jumps without a ramp. He just goes up the hill and fucking just jerks the bike in the air. And it gets down. And it's not like it's done fantastically. It actually, it's amazing what he's doing. And it's fucking pimped out. And I was like, I've never seen this shit. I didn't expect it from an old ass movie. So yeah, it kills this movie. And, you know, eventually in the end, he actually doesn't make it. And he's the cooler king.
But some of them do.
Some of them do. So, you know, great fucking movie. But
yeah. I think it's a great
classic
for me, film.
The moment of triumph, even though it wasn't a triumph for one of them, or some of them, it still it's the best representation of that underdog rising
The last part of the film is him going back to throwing the ball against the wall.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just cool. That's cool.
They don't murder him or they don't execute him, at least not then.
Yeah, and the guard that they play it, the guard that actually locks him up actually kind of admires him, so he just they're good to him. So
hopefully
yeah.
he would have survived until
got out of the.
I can't remember how close it is to 1945, but
VE or whatever day. I don't know.
All right, well, that's your list and my list, Wayne. Let's hear some honorable mentions very quickly. Do you have any, sir?
Sure. Fisher King, Billy Elliot. I mean it. Well, Forrest Gump.
No.
Tin Cup. I like Tin Cup.
Sure, Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump is probably the most, like, but I didn't feel like putting on this.
What are you, a fucking moron?
You can take that as your Forrest Gump. I don't care.
Yours, please?
I had Dodgeball, A True Underdog Story.
Good call.
It's in the title. Million Dollar Baby. Cool Runnings.
Really?
Come on, man. Jamaican bobsled team. How much more underdog do you get than that?
No, it was, I liked it. I just didn't think you would.
I haven't watched it for 25 years, so I couldn't really confidently put it on the list.
You did, yeah, man.
The Mighty Ducks, which I have seen. Quack, quack.
Really? Did you like... I've never seen The Mighty Ducks, but I'm like, what is it?
And Mystery Men.
Oh! I should have mentioned that one. I actually thought about it, but yeah, that's great too.
It's definitely an underdog story, so yeah. There we are. That's Alice. What about yours? Let's do that in the segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Mario in the Bar over on Twitter. For every kid that didn't make the cut or was never picked to play, these are my top 3 underdog movies: The Mighty Ducks, Little Giants, and the best, The Bad News Bears. Great.
That's where kids were smoking and shit when they were 15 and drinking. That's
swearing it. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Movie Reviews and 20Q's podcast, Sam Hurley, who's going to be on the show next week. More on that in just a moment.
Hurls.
Miracle, Moneyball, and Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah.
All of those definitely apply. John from the Pilot Comics podcast and supporter of the show, patron of the show, said, Major League, Karate Kid, and Rocky, duh.
That is your vote.
So duh that Wayne didn't include it on his list.
Meh, I say.
You can't handle the truth.
Whatever's go on.
Then Joe from Word Salad Radio said, we can't forget the story of a scrappy, plucky predator and his human companion defending a pyramid full of xenomorph serpents and their queen. Hashtag AVP.
This is the first one?
Yeah.
I assume. Yeah, okay.
God,
okay.
Just Joe. Then the Ocho Juro Parlay Hour, who I honestly thought before was the Oco Juro Parlay Hour, had Miracle, Rudy, first mention thereof, and Rocky as their number one.
Okay.
Tim Cormack had Dodgeball, A True Underdog Story, Eddie the Eagle, and that story that's all about a float of shit that won't go away, Seabiscuit.
Never thought of it like that. Glad I do now.
Get up on the roof from the Retro Cinema Podcast. Good friends, do check them out. Scarface.
Ooh, what?
Officer and a Gentleman, and Trading nice Places one. For Eddie Murphy's character at number one.
Yeah. Good call with the Trading Places. Nice one.
The Oscar Real Movie Podcast had a good exchange with them during the week. Do check them out. No Particular Order, Moneyball, Cinderella Man, There You Go, Wayne, ooh, and Miracle.
Nice.
All right. Then over to the Facebook community. Lawrence Warren said, remember the Titans, Rudy, and the movie Underdog?
I think I read about it. I can't remember what was in it. It was actually, yeah.
There may or may not be a blooper at the end that you want to listen to there, Lawrence. Black Jarvis, patron to the show, he said, Lord of the Rings 2. So two towers, I guess.
I suppose they were all like in the castle and then a million people, they're all the dogs.
Yeah, or are we talking about Frodo and
well, then that could be one, couldn't it?
The Karate Kid number 2 and Cinderella Man number 1.
Oh, shit.
Troy Spinner from the Great Mates podcast, part of CC Radio, said, there's a ton of great ones, but to this day, nothing gets me more hyped than Rocky 4.
Nice one. Because Rocky 4 rocked. Drago, oh yeah.
Ashley from the Rabbit Ears TV podcast said, Kill Bill, Warrior, and Whiplash, which is fair.
Oh, that's gangster. Yeah, that's a good list.
That's a good bit. It's there. Mina Harker said Moneyball, Warrior, and Aaron Brockovich as number one.
Yeah, good one.
With honorary mention, set number 7, Saving Private Ryan. Long-term listener
shit,
show.
Why didn't I fucking do that
one? We'll know that Wayne infamously put Saving Private Ryan as his number 7th war film. New listener show, I apologize for the ear pain that you just had.
Eat balls.
Kristen Arcaro, another patron of the show. Thank you very much, Kristen, for your support. The Pursuit of Happiness, Aaron Brockovich again, and Divergent.
Oh, I never saw that one.
No, I haven't seen that one either.
Cool.
Austin Scott had number 3, Hacksaw Ridge. Number 2, Hacksaw Ridge. And number 1, Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah, Paul's got your vote. Paul's on there.
One of the most moving movies I've ever seen. Chris Yeaney, another high level patron of the show. I think I mentioned him earlier. Dodgeball, it's in the damn name. Number 2, Independence Day. God. The Earth needs more leaders like Bill Pullen's character. And number 1, Rocky.
All right.
Chef Ben Randall from the In Weeds podcast had number 3, Boondock Saints, one of Wayne's favorite films.
Well, it was surprisingly good, I think.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to jump in. Number 2, Star Wars, A New Hope.
Sure.
And number 1, Serenity. Yes, Chef Ben. And then the last one then for today, Stephen Burns. Number 3, Aaron Brockovich. Again, a little left field, but a small-time, part-time lawyer takes on a massive firm and winning a class action. Number 2, Cinderella Man. Another vote.
Boom.
Probably for you, Wayne. Better underdog story than Rocky. Prove me wrong. Number 1, Cool Runnings. Yeah, we knew what happened, but a fantastic story about a team who everybody thought was a complete joke. And number 7, Saving Private Ryan.
Is everyone doing this now?
A small, plucky band of soldiers deserve this specific place in the countdown as they overcome overwhelming odds to see one very lucky soldier home when the rest of his brothers were killed in action. Many would say it deserves to be higher, but I think it wears number 7 as a badge.
That's right, dog.
Of honor.
That's what I'm talking about. Nice one.
Very, very nice. Thank you so much to everyone who got back to us with their feedback for this week. Sorry if we didn't get back to you. With regard to yours, we really, truly do appreciate your contributions to the show. All right, then. Let's wrap it up with what used to be at the start of the show. This week, we're doing the recount from last week's episode.
I'm confused.
Who wants a recount? Who? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recap? Who wants a recap?
Firstly, let's give a huge shout out to the Epic Film Guys for the live stream for A Cure.
Nice
if you
work,
haven't
man.
Heard, these gentlemen raised $15,000 American, give or take 4 billion trillion.
Yes, roughly 4 billion Australian dollars. Yes.
For research against curing cancer, mm-hmm. for curing cancer. Well done, Nick, Justin, Loy Sauce. Amazing effort. Very well helped by Dan from the Netflix and Spill and Gerald from Two Peas on a Podcast. Check out all those shows.
And your good self.
As a thank you. Oh, I was on for a minuscule amount. Like I take no credit at all for this. Those 5 gentlemen have really done a service to the podcast community more than we could ever hope to achieve.
Nice one, fellas.
Please check out those 3 shows. But I was on for a little bit and I'll feature some audio for the patrons at the very least, if not as a bonus episode.
Sure.
Going forward on the show. Now, Julio was another guest from the Contrarians podcast on live stream for A Cure. Here is what he had to say, because a big theme through live stream for A Cure was REAP.
Oh, God,
as
really?
As mentioned earlier in the show. For immediate release, HBO has acquired the rights to Reap, the Brazilian cut, and release it on Christmas 2021 alongside the original cut of Reap in a special three-hour extravaganza, which will also feature interviews with the cast and crew as well as behind-the-scenes footage. The Brazil cut, as originally dubbed by the internet, actually consists of a full-blown remake of Reap, the cult classic written and directed by Paul Brazula, which never received proper distribution due to budgetary reasons. He wrote 2 pages of that.
Oh my God.
Can we just say,
it's an actual press release.
If we actually do anything along these lines ever for the show,
he's up here,
we're going to pay Julio to write the press release. Thank you so much, Julio. That was very funny for you. Funny, making me laugh a lot. Then, finally, to the results from last week's show. The top 10 70s films.
Mm.
How do you reckon you went, Wayne?
I got fingered. Just straight up. Just right in the ass hole.
I was leading by 1. I think it's 7-6. Yes, you are indeed correct. I'm now leading 8-6.
Boom.
The final tally, 46 votes to me, 22 votes to you.
So Rogering.
Pretty much a reflection on last week's where you absolutely smashed the shit out of me. Now, where I lost votes clearly was for my dismissiveness of Blazing Saddles.
Yes!
People love the fact you picked it. I want to be clear. I didn't dismiss it because it was racist. I dismissed it because I didn't think it was that funny.
Yeah, which I'm also amazed at. Everyone knows Blazing Saddles is the bomb, baby. What's up? What's up?
Jonathan Kidd, for example, said, I vote for Paul, but I will defend Blazing Saddles. The satire was so poignant and cutting in its era that we're uncomfortable with it now. That's good. It worked. You're right.
Agreed.
And if you listen back to the episode, you'll hear I never have a go at the racism.
I'm done. We're done.
Really? Wow. Number 3 of all 70s.
Which itself is shocking that you thought that.
Couple of people jumped on or were happy you picked Grease, and I were critical of that, including Nicole Presley. Mm-hmm. So well done there. But then others were like, Wayne, what was going on that you left off The Godfathers and Jaws?
Yeah, I expected that.
Samuel Joseph, first time contributor to the show. Thank you, Samuel. Said, Halloween is the only reason Paul wins. Sorry, Wayne.
Yeah. Fine with that.
Daniel Lowe said, Wayne must have thrown this one on purpose. Surely.
Just goes like that sometimes.
But then, look, you can't please everyone because Luke Alexander said Wayne wins for not having The Godfather.
There you go. So it's all about talk.
It absolutely is indeed. So that makes it 8-6 on the year. I'm sure there'll be... I reckon this one might be close this week.
Yeah, we'll see.
Who knows? I'm sure people are sleeping.
We never know. I've actually
said that. And the last part of this week's recount is I want to shout out the Forgotten Cinema podcast. The Mikes. Mikes Butler and Field on their show. They took my suggestion to do Mystery Men for a whole episode.
Yeah.
One mic liked it, one mic hated it.
Ah, so really? If you want
to hear a take on why this film failed and didn't do very well.
Someone hated it?
Yeah.
Dude.
Lots of people hated it given the budget and the like. But you and I enjoy it. It's probably one of the reasons we have a vaguely similar sense of humor. But anyway, there you are. Do check out The Forgotten Cinema. Thank you, gentlemen, for picking a film which I suggested to you. And that's it for this week's episode 271 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. Wayne, how do listeners get in touch with us?
Open AltaVista and just Google those. Search for The Countdown. You'll find us. Find The Countdown Podcast or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at TheCountdownPC. You can follow us on Podbean and like individual episodes there. Check out ccradio.com.au for ourselves and a bunch of other great Australian podcasts. And finally, the Facebook listener community link is in the show notes. Wayne, what's happening to episode 272 of The Countdown?
This should be interesting.
Oh, boy.
next week, we're going to count down.
That's a bingo.
Well, we have a guest, don't we?
We do.
We have Sam Hurley from...
The Movie Reviews and 20 Qs podcast is going to be joining us to count down. What would he count down? Let me see. The top 10 New Zealander films.
Right. So, Sam's a Kiwi and Paul's an Australian. I'm basically brown.
If you listen carefully, you can hear Wayne making his excuses right now.
Okay.
Early.
No, I've just got to do a bit of research. Or a lot of research.
And this suggestion came from Tara Maholik, patron to both our show and Sam's show, who said, wouldn't it be great to have the two of you on?
Now,
All of us doing New Zealand films. She also suggested Wayne. So here's my suggestion. Do you want to do Hunt for the Little People next week as a main review?
I guess that would help me out.
Do you want to?
Yeah, all right.
All right, there we go. So that's what's happening next week on The Countdown. And we'll also be on Sam's show to talk a film which he will reveal on his, maybe a little bit down the track, but we'll be doing that then.
Alrighty.
All right, that's it for us. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the show. We really, truly appreciate it. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
And now we're out.
Thank you. We'll catch you next time.
hell? Oh, wait, wait, wait. Oh my god, this is the Underdog theme song! Man, I was gonna use Underdog for like the show graphic.
Very nice. Paul is miming the words to this video.
Well, there you go.